Overheard at Yoga is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. Beep. And we're back. Welcome to Overheard at Yoga. I have on my good friend, Nick Perner. Nick, say hello.
Hello.
So I have some things I need to get out of the way. Melissa, who runs the front desk of the shared space where we record, she has started a Boise Revival Project. So this is helping musicians who may have struggled through COVID and as well as helping local restaurants. So live music and restaurants in the downtown Boise area. If you're interested about these events, check out BoiseRevivalProject.com, and it's going to be every Thursday, so it's like a first Thursday thing. And Melissa like gave us a little tour and told us we had to be quiet when we were in the hallways, but I think that's really cute that she's doing that. So now that I've announced that, hi, Nick, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. I just did sculpt class this morning, so I feel accomplished and tired.
A good feeling.
Mm-hmm. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a little accomplished and tired. It's been a long work day.
Yeah. Haven't you been working?
Insane hours.
Yeah.
I work for a digital mobile app agency in Austin, Texas. Uh-huh. And we have a lot of international employees in India and elsewhere. And so,
oh my gosh,
there are meetings late at night, early in the morning. And here I am.
Can you give us a little intro about you?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, so who are you?
That's like a big question.
Is it?
Hello, everyone. I'm Nick. Hello, Nick. I was mostly raised here in Boise, Idaho. Left for a while, came back about 10 years ago, maybe. And I think we became friends about 4 years back.
Okay.
I remember the first time I met you, actually. It was at a workshop at Hollywood. Maybe it was an acro workshop or something. You had some come in from out of town like 6 years ago.
Were they from Portland, Oregon?
Yes, they were.
Yeah,
do you remember that?
I do remember that workshop. I'm struggling to remember meeting you though.
I mean, it was a big workshop.
I think I had my boyfriend at the time come to that one. And it was a little awkward for us.
Were you acroing together?
So it was this acro yoga workshop and someone had to be a bass and someone had to be a flyer. And mm-hmm. I struggled with both parts and they put you in little groups. And so there was another girl in our group named Christina and she was way better at it than I was. So my boyfriend kept flying the other girl, Christina, because
I remember this. There were two Christinas.
There were two Christinas. And because I was a yoga teacher at the studio, I don't know. I just kind of felt like I had to be in work mode a little bit and I wanted them to have a really good time because they paid for the workshop. And so my dear sweet boyfriend, who was already so out of his comfort zone, he ended up being the base for the like two other women. And so I kept just like standing by, making sure no one fell. And then I tried to be the base and I couldn't. I tried to be the flyer and I couldn't. Yeah.
Oh, acro yoga.
Yeah, I was a little distracted.
Is it even yoga? Acro yoga?
It is.
It is. Okay.
Someone's doing yoga.
Someone's doing
yoga. One person is, at least.
One person's doing yoga.
Okay, so how was that acro experience for you?
I remember it being fun. It was probably one of my first introductions to acro yoga, which I've experienced more in the circus or burlesque scene than in the yoga scene.
Oh.
Because I've also performed in burlesque shows. You know this, right?
I know it, like, not enough about this. I need to hear more about this.
Yeah. So once upon a time, I also taught sculpt classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a student, a friend. Her name is Anna. And when I was in a moment of freeing my schedule once upon a time, 4 years ago, maybe I was trying to rid myself of commitments. I stopped teaching yoga. I should mention I'm a yoga teacher. I stopped teaching yoga at a studio. And at that exact moment, this friend of mine, Anna, she came and said, "Hey, my aerial partner," because she performed aerial dance, I guess, was out sick or injured or something like
okay.
that. And she asked if I wanted to give it a try. And I said, why not? I have all this time. Why not fill up my schedule again right away?
Yeah.
So we started rehearsing at maybe 5 a.m. every day.
Whoa.
And 2 months later, we performed in our first show.
Well, so aerial dance is what you did?
I know all of the burlesque performers out there and aerialists are probably thinking, like, this guy doesn't know the right terminology, not using the right words. But so what we did, we performed using straps. And these straps are hung from, they're like an apparatus that's hung from like a ball bearing thing, like 14 or 16 feet
okay.
in the air. We both had our own strap that goes around your wrist. And we would spin, you know, around this ball bearing in the ceiling and make different shapes as you spin.
Was that
around.
Fun? Did you enjoy that?
So much fun. But I have this part of me that really likes being a performer, which probably came from an upbringing that was intermixed with a lot of jump roping.
Okay.
Where I spent a lot of time touring different states and countries performing in jump rope performances.
And you still do jump roping, right?
I do. Yeah. It's tempting to dive into this topic, right?
There's
but
like
we're like,
so
we got to get to the yoga.
Well, there's like so many things we can talk about. And so recently we were on a yoga retreat in Mexico together. And I remember the morning we did the sunrise meditation at Punta Sur. We were leaving, or I don't know what. I remember like walking by this area that no one was at. And then
by the large iguana statue.
By the large iguana statue and like the Incan woman. And then I look over and there's a man just vigorously jumping rope and doing tricks. And then I realize that's Nick. And
that's
and,
me.
And you're getting your photo taken or a little video done. And I want to see this video. And I would really like you to post this if you haven't already.
I don't even know if it was on my phone.
Someone took a photo or a video.
I think it is on my phone. That's what I get for not reviewing all those like 200 photos I haven't looked through yet.
Yes, and you still owe me photos for your event next week.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's great that's on the air. I'm so good at fulfilling those commitments to you.
And I'm actually still on Laura, who's our guest teacher at our studio next week. And she still hasn't gotten me her photo or bio or info.
That's great. I'm glad she can't defend herself here and I can. I've been busy. I don't think Laura's been busy at all.
I think she's been really busy, actually. But you guys were both on the retreat, and I think I pulled both of you aside, like, get me some photos.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of just like yoga teacher life. We fall into different events, and we let the details pile up. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, the activity of yoga teaching is extracurricular to a lot of other things that we have going on.
True.
It's very difficult to be a full-time yoga teacher and make that economically sustainable.
Uh-huh.
So often events that we plan, workshops we do, it's in spare time or time missed sleeping to be able to pull those things off, right?
Yeah, I think you said that correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, so jump roping, aerial performing, yoga teaching. What else do you do?
There was a time in my young adulthood I would have liked to have been a professional yo-yoer.
Really?
That could have been a thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Product of the 90s, right?
I need do you have videos online of this too?
No, but I have a friend who has great videos on Instagram.
Okay.
His name is Jonathan Bento. Go look him up.
Okay.
That's my plug for you, Jonathan.
Did you know that you're going to be talking about yo-yoing on Overheard at Yoga?
No.
Okay, should we talk about yoga?
Yeah.
How did you get into yoga?
I think my path into yoga may be a little different than many of the stories that I hear people share. My first introduction to the idea of yoga was actually on a podcast.
Okay.
On a podcast. A little over, probably about 12 years ago on a podcast. There was a podcast, it still exists, it's still around, it's still very active, called Mormon Stories. You ever heard of it?
I've heard a lot of Mormon stories, I feel like. Like, I YouTube them sometimes.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Same podcast, now a YouTube series.
Okay.
About maybe 15 years ago, this fellow named John DeLynn, he started this this podcast called Mormon Stories, where he would bring people who were actively participating in the Mormon faith, or maybe had left the Mormon faith, and have them just tell their story.
Mm-hmm.
Long podcasts, 4 hours, 6 hour podcasts, kind of almost Joe Rogan style.
Okay.
You know, like, we're going to talk about this until we're done talking about this.
Okay.
And for a portion of my life, I was practicing Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time I was wrestling with a lot of my own internal conflict with the Mormon religion, with the Mormon church, and mm-hmm. sorting out things in my own life. And there was a podcast about yoga. Yeah.
There was a podcast about yoga?
There was a podcast about yoga.
Okay.
It's a pausing point. It's very important. You can go look up this podcast, probably. If you were to go to the Mormon Stories website, you could probably go like search for yoga. It's probably like the oldest Mormon Stories.
So on this podcast about Mormon Stories, for people who have Mormon stories, they were talking about yoga.
Yeah.
Okay.
So someone, I can't remember who, if I had like a phone in my hand, I'd probably try to Google it and fact check myself, told his story, his experience, kind of harnessing the power of yoga to work through anxiety and different, maybe like emotional sticking points in his life. And I had very little concept of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
If you asked me to describe a yoga class, I probably would have failed to get even 10% of the details right. I'd never seen a yoga class. I'd never been in a yoga studio. I had no concept of like the commercial side of yoga, or Lululemon at this time was like a thing, but not advertising. So there wasn't like kind of the media bombardment that we have sometimes about yoga now.
Yeah.
I probably would have thought of Tic Tac commercials, right?
Okay.
Remember those own Tic Tac commercials? Like, can you breathe without a Tic Tac?
Oh. Yes, that
have been like the totality of my exposure to yoga.
Okay.
And I remember in the podcast, the, I feel bad. I don't know this guy's name. It's like, you fact check me or something. Like, look it up. Mormon Stories Yoga. I bet you can find this guy while I'm talking.
Okay.
For those of you who can't see us right now, we're in this like room on a couch and Christina's on a chair and she's here with her phone, like frantically typing now, trying to find him. On this podcast, this fellow who's talking about yoga is kind of explaining the different limbs of yoga. And he's talking about the things that yoga can do for you. And he's mentioning words that were totally foreign to me, like asana, which refers to maybe physical postures in yoga, right? And he's also talking about his yoga practice, which was entirely meditative. Oh, this is being handed to me.
Is that him?
The Hindu yogic tradition.
March 21st, 2011.
Yeah, this would have been it 10 years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the fellow. Look at this. You found this.
He looks happy.
Anybody who needs Christina to fact check you, she's here with your phone. Okay. And he was explaining his yoga practice. Wait, what was his name?
Phil McLemore.
Phil McLemore.
Phil.
Plug for you, Phil.
Phil McLemore.
Thank you, Phil. You don't know that you
Phil McLemore
influenced my life. So Phil was describing his yoga practice, which was all about meditation. And so this is my introduction to the term yoga. And I'm associated with meditation. He talks about his meditation practice and what it's done for him in his life and all these things. And I carried that idea with me for a couple of years. hearing that podcast didn't inspire me to go check out a yoga class, but it kind of like planted the seed of what yoga is.
Okay.
And it was this idea of being able to reconcile difficult things that you might experience emotionally. And you did it sitting down, being very still. Probably fast forward a year and a half after that, or maybe before that, because I don't know. My memory sometimes plays tricks on me. My sister is a group exercise instructor. She's taught just about every type of group exercise you can imagine. And at some point, she was teaching a Payo class. Payo. And Payo, another good term to Google if you're unfamiliar with yoga, is like this hybrid between Pilates and yoga. And at some point, I went to one of her Payo classes. And her Payo class was maybe 45 minutes or an hour at some gym. It was very physical, kind of like doing plyometrics. I would say there was probably a couple sun salutations, which is a common sequence of postures we do at a yoga practice, you know. And that would have been my second reference point for, okay, this is what yoga is. Very different than my other reference point of sitting somewhere meditative for hours on end, right?
Like a spiritual practice versus a physical practice.
Like a spiritual practice versus a physical practice. If those are two different things.
I don't know.
Dun, dun, dun. I don't know. This is getting lengthy. We'll keep going.
Keep going.
My third reference point for learning about yoga was probably a year after, year later. I don't know where we are in time now. I don't have that timeline in front of me. And my family all separately had checked out hot yoga classes.
Okay.
Which I think my sister, my mother, someone called me up and said, you gotta try this. Like, it's such a good...
Hot yoga people are crazy.
It's such a good
and
workout.
And they need to bring everybody into it.
The irony is, fast forward years later, I practice hot yoga and none of them do. So there's the ironic part.
So many people begged me to try hot yoga. You'll love it. You'll love it. And they were right. For 2 years, I tried to not go until I was tricked into going. And then now I love it and I teach it. And those friends like don't do it either. So I can totally understand.
You know, I think there's this intensity to a hot yoga practice where you might almost be surprised that you're still alive coming out of it. Like you feel a sense of accomplishment, like I survived. And you want your friends to feel that too.
I had an old friend show up this last week to my yoga class, and he was one of the like founding people who got me into yoga and hot yoga because he had done it before. And so he was coming through town, stopped by the studio, and which it's kind of nice that I've worked at the yoga studio that I work out for so long, because when friends travel and come and go, they know where to find me and they can jump into a class. So it was so funny. He arrived and he's the one who like would take me to hot yoga. And he was having this moment in the lobby where he would go like walk up to the studio door, turn around, walk back, go to the men's room, come back out, like kind of stand around by the cubby, like go to the water fountain, act like he was going into the studio and be like, I don't know if I'm ready for this. Come back out. And he's doing this whole weird dance. I'm like, what are you doing? Just go in. It's class time. I'm waiting for you. He's like, and he opens the door and he walks in. He's like, it's hot in here. I'm like, what? So he gets on his yoga mat and poor guy, I think he had had a long few nights. And he made it maybe like 10 minutes and then he just took a nap and did some stretching. Granted, he was wearing bright orange sparkly shorts and he didn't prepare with the right shorts. And he had realized immediately that they were too short for yoga. So he was just like, I'm tired and I'm wearing the wrong clothing and I'm just going to lay here.
Yoga is all about long shorts.
And he kept like sitting up a couple of times looking like he was about to get up and leave. And he'd put his shirt on and sit there for a minute and look at the door and look at me and look at the door. And then he would take his shirt off and like lay back down. It was like a whole funny thing. And I'm like, dude, you used to take me to yoga all the time. You know the drill.
I'm remembering another part of this story. Okay. I'll give a recap here at the end. So like we're like Nick can actually
take
tell
us on this
story in chronological order. We are in chronological order because my family, I don't remember who, invited me to a hot yoga class. And remember this part distinctly because I went to this hot yoga class the day after a half marathon race that I ran in Boise, which is a very difficult half marathon called the Race to Roby Creek, sometimes called like the hardest half marathon in the West or something.
Whoa.
Like that. Have you ever run Roby Creek?
No. Oh my gosh. That sounds not fun.
they make it exciting. You dress up and there's a theme every year and you run uphill for 10 miles, right?
Yeah.
In like this kind of dirt little ravine. And then once you get to the top, then you go downhill and you're in the trees. But the downhill is very steep. So even though it feels really good getting to the top, all of a sudden like your knees are killing you.
Is it in the summertime too? Isn't it like really hot outside?
It's in April every year.
Okay.
Except last year, pandemic, and this year.
Some people ran it anyway.
I know. Well,
bless their hearts.
The whole virtual race thing where everyone just kind of runs it on their own and then reports back.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. That year it was very hot. Some years it rains. That year it was very hot. So I was pretty spent. That was on a Saturday.
Did you get hydrated before you went to this class?
The yoga class?
Yeah.
Probably. I mean,
okay, so ran, that
this,
wasn't the
ran this long race, but it was a half marathon and it's a lot of uphill. Your body's sore and tired afterward. And I think we went to a probably like a 9 a.m. hot yoga class the next morning. It was pitched to me as this will be a great way to recover. And I remember. So we still know. And here's my plug. The teacher that taught that class, her name is Shelley. And Shelly and I, everybody, will be teaching a yoga nidra a week and a half from now. Although this will be
Saturday,
4 days from
June
when you hear this.
19th,
Saturday, June 19th.
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
at Hollywood Market Yoga in the North End.
Please come.
Come. Just show up.
Just show up. Mm-hmm. Come and enjoy.
This Saturday.
Very different experience of what I'll tell you about happened to me with Shelly right now.
Okay.
So, at the time, these hot yoga classes that Shelly and others taught at that studio, they were roughly 80, 85 minutes. And it was grueling. It was a challenge. It wasn't the recovery experience, I think, that was pitched to me. And I remember distinctly one part of that class where I think Shelly kept saying over and over again to the class as a whole, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to rest. And I think I heard myself in my own head saying, no.
You're one of those people.
I will go on, you know. And I don't think I took a single break that entire
class. Was it called Sumits then, or was it Essential?
It was still called Sumits. I think it may have been like just a little after that it became
and
Essential.
I feel like that studio was insanely hot, right? Like super hot.
Having later trained in that environment, we were definitely trained to keep it at a certain heat.
How hot?
We kept it around 106 probably.
What kind of air was that? Was it like the steam would come out? I feel like sometimes I'd walk in
the
there
not
and I couldn't
breathable
see.
Kind. Yeah. Okay. So in the world of hot yoga studios, there's different ways of heating your studio.
Yes. Right?
And at the hot yoga studio where you and I teach, we have these nice infrared panels that kind of evenly distribute the heat, right? Mm-hmm. Nice technology. It's great. It does keep the floor kind of hot when you want to like cool the room down afterward. But
yeah,
this studio had maybe five large heaters mounted up high on the walls, it blew hot air. So depending where you were in the room, you might be standing right in front of one of these heaters that's just kind of like roasting you.
That far left
rotisserie
front
chicken
spot would always be like the last one available and I'd be late and be like, no.
The studio also, you and I have done a class there together.
We have?
Yeah. Remember, we went to a Saturday something or other there a couple years ago. Do you remember that?
No.
We hung out on the balcony after we visited.
Oh, yes.
What was that? It was some event.
That was over COVID. We went to a class. We went to Cassie's Bradshaw's class.
Yeah, right at the beginning when places were closing down and we're like, and we still need...
Someone was next to you in class. Were they next to you or just in the room?
I don't remember.
And you were like, oh my God, we got to go. Anyway.
So we also had to pump... We had to pump humidity into the room.
Yes.
So teaching at that studio was very complicated because we had a separate light switch that controlled each of the heaters. They didn't have a thermostat. And then we had a separate control that turned on and off the humidity. And then we had a separate control that turned on and off exhaust. So it was kind of like, it's kind of like driving heavy machinery, right? The entire class, you'd walk around the room and you'd have to kind of like feel like where it was too hot, where it was too cold, which heater you turn on and off. And I contrast that with the nice infrared heaters that we have in the studio at Hollywood Market, where you kind of set the temperature and you forget about it.
Yeah. Like
65-70% of the thinking power was going into keeping the room, the proper temperature and humidity at that studio.
I want to say like 8 years ago, I heard a rumor that at that other studio, someone who worked there would take your class if you were a teacher and you would have to watch her because the way she placed her water bottle would tell you like when to adjust the temperature in the room. So like if she had it on the right side of her mat, that meant you need to turn the heat down. Or if she had it on the left side, turn sideways, you had to turn it up. I don't know if that was going on when you were there, but
that was not going on. That sounds complicated.
But I remember she came over to our studio and she was like, this is so much easier. Oh my gosh. Without having to like worry about teaching your class, worry about managing the class, and then having somebody in the room moving their water bottle around that you had to keep an eye on also.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the heat has simplified a bit.
Okay. Back to my story.
Yes.
So this hot yoga class, 90 minutes or something.
After Roby Creek,
determined to not rest, determined to push through. And I completed it. And I probably had, I can't really remember, I probably had that same euphoric feeling, right? Mm. That so many people talk about taking a hot yoga class. You feel like you've survived something.
Yeah,
I think that does something to your primitive brain, right? Like I prevailed. Mm. I believe I went back the next day.
Oh, so you were like, let's try this again.
If not 2 days later, but certainly within the next couple of days. And there were a few other great, great teachers there. There was a teacher named Amber. There was a teacher named Dave Strong. I remember Shelley, Amber, and Dave all taught at times that were convenient for me, I think. But I also really liked all three of them. I remember going to their classes frequently, as well as the other teachers too. But I think just scheduling wise, I ended up with their classes like a lot, you know. So there's like reference point number three of what was yoga to me. All of a sudden now there's this whole experience in a yoga studio, dedicated yoga space, a certain aesthetic there, you know, there might be, you know, an om on the wall or different things to decorate the place, like somewhat Eastern.
My first yin class was at that studio before I'd ever done a yoga training, and I didn't know what yin was.
Oh.
And I thought I was showing up to an 80-minute hot yoga class.
Was Monica perhaps the teacher?
I have no idea who the teacher was. I think Amber was at the desk, and she's like, you'll love it. Go in there. And I'm like wearing like teeny tiny little shorts and teeny tiny little sports bra. And I walk in and I'm freezing to death in this cold room.
Right.
But it was fascinating because the mats were in a circle and I'd only seen the mats facing the front of the room. And the teacher had notes with her and I'd never seen a teacher like have notes before.
Right.
And it was a very different experience. The lights were off the whole time.
So to describe these two different experiences for the audience, right? The type of hot yoga that I experienced there and that was probably your first experience with hot yoga was a scripted class or a sequence class. Every class would be basically the same postures, every single class. And even a lot of the same vocabulary and words were used. And during the class, the pacing would be very, very similar every class. And it's kind of like this nice packaged, bundled up product. You kind of know what you're going to get. And mm-hmm. there could be something meditative about that, right? Because eventually you do it half a dozen times and you stop thinking about what's next, maybe, because it's like your body's familiar with where you go next and what the next posture is, and you can move inward in a certain way.
A lot of us joke that it's fast food yoga because you know exactly what you're going to get. And you're like, and it's all prepared and packaged for you. There it is.
And you'll have maybe 100 different postures during a class. I did a chart once of Sumit's yoga. I like made a poster for myself, right? And there was like 110 different things that happened if you count them all, you know? A yin class is very slow. You might experience 6-8 postures total during an hour, and you spend 5 minutes in each of them, right? And that would be what you did in that circle getting cold because the heat isn't on.
Well, because I was expecting a totally different experience. And so to kind of just walk in there and like, oh, here we go. And
here
I was new to yoga at the time. So I'm like, what is this?
And despite the physicality of one of those hot yoga classes where you're challenged, your muscles are challenged, your body's challenged to keep up even in the heat and you're sweating, there's a particular challenge there to a yin class where you are still and you're not moving, you're not speaking, and there's nothing else to be left with but your thoughts for 5 minutes of being in a very uncomfortable position as you feel like a stretch in your body and you're like, oh my God, my body's so tight.
I breathe? And then like halfway through, you're like, oh, I can go a little bit deeper. And then the next day when you do take your usual yoga class, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so flexible. Who knew? That's how I feel anyway.
I'm remembering another yoga reference point for myself. Another like time I was introduced to yoga. I was probably about 14 and I was a counselor at a national jump rope camp, okay, that all of these different people from the country came to, and you worked on your jump rope freestyle skills for a week, right?
Awesome.
I know.
So cool.
Yeah. And I had a friend, he was Indian, a fellow counselor who had experience in yoga from his time in India before coming to live in San Jose with his family. And he let us in some stretching. This is what reminded me, like I'm thinking about the stretching. He let us in some stretching that we were told was yoga. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. It's very nice stretching, you know, at the end of a long day of jump rope freestyle. I don't know.
Do you still do jump rope freestyle?
Oh, we want to talk about that. We'll have a separate jump rope podcast.
Okay, I'll bring you back. We'll talk about jump roping.
Only while in Mexico.
You'll do a jump rope Mexico retreat.
We'll do a jump roping retreat to Mexico. Definitely.
And then we'll do some stretching.
Lots of stretching. We might even call it yoga.
Okay.
So
you're doing hot yoga now.
We did this hot yoga thing. A few weeks later, I went on a trip to Hawaii. My boss at the time, one of my bosses at the time, lived in Hawaii on the Big Island. And there was kind of this like work trip mixed with vacation trip. And somehow I was new to this yoga thing, right? So I'm like, wow, while I travel, maybe I'll do some yoga. And got somehow connected with this yoga that was going to happen on a beach. And I thought, that's great. That's great. Yoga on a beach. I'll do yoga on a beach. And showed up. It was a sunrise yoga on a beach type experience. We did some really simple, gentle kind of movement close to the ground. We're kind of like on all fours and breathing a little bit. And then we sit down on our like cross-legged or something. And she takes us into a nearly 30-minute chanting meditation. Okay. And the meditation, one that I still practice, it's a sa-ta-na-ma meditation, if you've ever done it before. It's an interesting one because it's the only meditation that's actually endorsed by the, or at least at the time, because I like researched this at the time, endorsed by the Alzheimer's Association of America.
Whoa, interesting.
Rebuilding. Like the neural pathways and synapses that are harmed by Alzheimer's.
So say it again slowly.
It's four syllables. Mm-hmm. Sa, ta, na, ma. And you chant and sing this, combining it with a motion with your hands where you press your index finger and thumb together for the sa, then your middle finger and thumb for the ta, your ring finger and thumb for the ma and na with the pinky.
So M before N?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Which kind of correlates with also Sat Nam. Mm-hmm. Sat Nam, you know, which is a common
reading. So you did this for 30 minutes.
Yes. The way a Sat Nam meditation works is you sing these four syllables together with the mudra or the hand movement for the first third of the meditation. The second third of the meditation is done repeating and singing those syllables without vocalizing them, so just in your head.
Mm.
And then for the third third, you sing again. It's often practiced either in 12 minutes, so 4 minutes, 4 minutes, and 4 minutes, so singing for 4 minutes, silent for 4 minutes, singing for 4 minutes, or for 30 minutes, so 10 minutes, 10 minutes, and 10 minutes. Yeah. And there's all sorts of, I mean, I learned so much. It was just this yoga on the beach thing. And she's talking about the energy coming up in through the crown of the head and out through the third eye and like the breathing. And it's like, oh my God, what's going on? And so then that was yoga. So these are all the things that I'm told are yoga, right? It's like, how do you sort all this out? Like what is yoga?
And before all you had was that TikTok commercial.
All I have was the Tic Tac commercial and Enya and Tic Tac, Tic Tac, Tic Tac.
Like my first yoga on the beach experience was I had never done yoga on the beach and I had never been on a yoga retreat. And when you are a poor yoga teacher, what do? You host a retreat. So I hosted a retreat with the yoga studio and I knew I wanted to teach yoga on the beach because I've always wanted to do yoga on the beach. And so as a yoga teacher who has never taught yoga on the beach, I was like, you guys, it's going to be amazing. Let's do it. So we were in Nicaragua and the beach was really big and long. And you had to walk through like really, really hot sand when it got really hot to get to where the sand smoothed out by the ocean. But at the time that we chose to do it was the evening, so it wasn't that hot, but it was gonna get hot. Anyway, we had a lot of people and it just got so sandy and so dirty, and it wasn't like a grounded earth class. It was just like, let's just do yoga. And my idea of yoga at the time was like traditional hot yoga, Bikram yoga with vinyasa. So we're doing all these warriors and sand's just getting everywhere and no one can hear me, and I'm just like running up and down the beach trying to yell over the ocean, which it was hysterical. But we got some great photos and they're really beautiful. But after that, I would have definitely structured the yoga on the beach a little bit differently so that people could hear me.
And more recently, we did yoga on a beach and we got eaten by things, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so then the last time I did yoga on the beach, I got bitten by, what was eating us?
We're unsure if they were baby jellyfish or if they were some little sand critter, but, you know, blood was shed.
Yoga on the beach is not as sexy as it sounds at all.
Not when you're practicing pranam.
What is pranam?
You should tell us what pranam is, and I'll tell the fun part of the story where we're getting eaten
okay.
and blood is being
okay.
shed.
So our amazing friend Megan Aaron, who I did an episode with earlier, she takes us down to the beach for the closing of our yoga retreat to do pranams. And pranams are very close to the earth. You are literally laying face down on your stomach in the sand. But we brought yoga mats, so we're in our yoga mat, but were we on our yoga?
No yoga mat. We drew our own yoga mats in the sand with our fingers.
That's what I'm thinking of. She's like, you could also draw it in the sand.
So. Apparently it felt like a yoga mat because you remember a yoga mat.
I think I was laying on it for the longest time and she kept telling everyone to get ready. And I kept thinking in my Virgo mind, like, when they're ready, then I'll stand up and be ready. And they weren't ready. So I kept just chilling on my yoga mat and Megan looks at me and she's like, are you joining us? What are you doing? I'm like, oh, are we ready? So then that's why I was like the last person to lie face down in the sand on the beach. And we have our arms over our heads and then we're doing chaturanga. I can't remember, but we kept come like did
when you pranam, you is that a verb? When you pranam? I don't
Megan
really
needs
know
to
how
explain
to
explain it.
When you practice a pranam, you end up laying out flat with your arms stretched out in front of you, mm-hmm. and your entire front of your body is against the earth. And it can be a somewhat dirty experience because if you're in the dirt's on you, but we're in the sand, so the sand is on us and the crashing wave is coming into us. And that's all very nice.
The water comes up and your hands are in a prayer and it's like a physical prayer.
But one by one, including, you know, Melissa, my girlfriend to my left, and I think maybe Gina to my right and you were close by, people are getting bitten. And and it's not just like something stung me. It's a bite and then there's blood coming out. And so that was our pranam experience.
This was so funny too, because Melissa's the first one who's like, I got to get out of here. She goes in the ocean. She's trying to wash it off. And Megan described afterwards that she was like, wow, Melissa's really feeling it. She's ready to get in the ocean and good for her. And then slowly she starts seeing everyone else like getting in the ocean and like washing their bodies. And she's like, everyone's just, I guess we're going in the ocean now.
She doesn't realize that there's blood.
She hadn't been bitten and she didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that was so funny.
So I'm going to loop back around here to my yoga, yoga experience. I had a very moving experience there in that meditation, so much so that I began practicing the Sata Na Ma meditation by myself religiously, like consistently, almost every day. And it was really meaningful. There's another little bit that I'm remembering all this as we talk. I haven't thought about it's like 10 years now. You know?
Awesome. There
was also an introduction to Iyengar yoga that I had through a yoga app that no longer exists in the state that it did then. It was called Yoga Studio. It was later acquired by Gaia and they kind of changed the whole thing and got rid of all the Iyengar stuff and they put in the more mainstream kind of vinyasa stuff. But I had used that app quite a bit at home as sort of a home practice. And Iyengar is a different form of yoga, a different lineage of yoga, which also moves quite well. It can move slower, you know, it can move much slower than what you would find in a more
power
common,
vinyasa? I don't know,
more common power vinyasa or hot yoga class. Right. Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of my life actually for about 6 months. It was recommended to me by a therapist
really, your therapist recommended Iyengar yoga?
Yes.
Interesting.
I had a therapist or a brief therapy interaction in Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And out of that, I was recommended to try out this yoga app and I did.
Do you feel like you transitioned from like one religion to another religion?
You know, I asked myself that, but at the time I was practicing Mormon. Mm. I was practicing Mormon at the time. I guess you could say I left the Mormon church about 8 years ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And so this came before that, though. Mm-hmm. This came before that. It was kind of to help with some anxiety and maybe some like pressure I felt around perfectionism and some tendencies.
Are you a
like
Virgo?
That. Sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're a Virgo.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So my yoga story. Those are like the beginnings of my yoga story. It's all very disjointed. It's very disjointed. And it kind of felt disjointed because there were all these different inputs that felt very different, but Everyone called it yoga.
Yeah.
You know? And I'll be honest, like today there are certain things that people call yoga that I distinctly reject as being yoga because they are based around ideas that don't jive with me as being yoga.
Okay.
And that's a controversial thing to say here on your podcast.
Yeah. What is yoga?
I don't believe a workout is yoga. And okay. A lot of people looking for a new way of working out will try out yoga.
There used to be a yoga teacher I knew, and she would never teach core work, quote unquote core work. She would never do like ab sit-ups or even in hot hour when she... So we teach this class at my studio called Hot Hour. It's a sequence-based Bikram vinyasa blend class. And there's this one little teeny tiny section for like 1 minute where you do leg raises. You're flat on your back and you raise your legs up and down, leg raises. And she would refuse to do them and teach them because that wasn't yoga. She's like, you're already doing core work with a plank and you should be using your core in other ways. We're not doing that. It's not yoga. And I was like, okay, you don't have to teach that.
See, maybe we should have started the hour here instead of started the hour with jump rope because I do firmly believe in kind of a connection between mind and body,
mm-hmm.
Physicality. And I think in many ways, like ideas around life being an embodied practice and yoga being an embodied practice did fill a void of spirituality for me and probably still does in a lot of ways, you know, and working out, I know this is contradicting myself, working out, is a part of that. It's a part of that, you know,
I think working out is very mental. So it's not just physical.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of mental discipline to do that. And you reach some crazy places in your mind when you're doing that. And for me, that's just crazy tough. And I think yoga, mind, body, spirit, unity, we're unifying these pieces. Or even if you're saying you're unifying them, at least we're drawing attention to each of those pieces in your yoga practice, whether you're eating a Tic Tac or...
Tic Tac. I want to say Tic Tac. Every time you say Tic Tac, it sounds wrong now.
I think maybe so your kids tic-tac. Are on TikTok and that's why you're tic-tac. Thinking of TikTok.
Yeah.
Tic Tac.
So much of it.
If you're doing a Tic Tac commercial or if you're chanting or if you're doing a hot yoga class or freaking working out, I mean, it is yoga if you're bringing in those elements, right?
You know, so for our listeners, hello listeners, Christine and I were recently on a yoga retreat together. And during my time at that yoga retreat, I spent a lot of time reflecting on my yoga journey, or maybe the state of my yoga practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I have felt for a long time that there's been something missing. In my first introduction to hot yoga, there was a certain intensity to the practice, which may have been external, right? You experience this heat, like the heat itself or the humidity or the physicality of the postures strung together in a sequence, or even the challenge of setting time aside to like make it to the studio. All these things kind of add up to working through a new prioritization of maybe your thought patterns and how you live your life. And somewhere along the way, the intensity begins to maybe dull a little bit,
mm-hmm.
right? And I've had craving to rekindle that intensity, which, how do you do that? Because eventually if you do hot yoga every day, the heat doesn't get to you as much, you know, the postures feel, more accessible. It doesn't strain your body. And I think all those things at the beginning, they really get you out of your head. And they help train you they help train you kind of in thought patterns or something that alleviates some stress, and it carries over into your life, you know? Over time, how do you maintain that? I don't know. It's something that I've been thinking about, thought about a lot on the yoga practice. And you know, one of my intentions while I was there, because I told you, I kind of rededicated myself to very simple breath work in my yoga practice. So when there was a vinyasa class we did, and a vinyasa class is where you kind of link breath with movement in a yoga practice, I would extend my breath to the actual capacity of my breathing, which being, I don't know, a taller man, having practiced yoga for a number of years, my lungs are probably bigger than some people. I can extend an inhale and an exhale quite a bit longer than maybe other people. And you saw, you led us in some practices. I was distinctly behind everybody. And I, as a teacher, sometimes it's frustrating, right? Because it's like, oh, like what's happening over here? But you knew my intention, so I'm sure you were patient with me. And that was a little piece of like helping to recapture some of that intensity in my practice. But I think that's part of your yoga journey, right? Is like over time, things shift.
Exploring your yoga, choosing what you're going to work on. Even when you do a class that's the same all the time, you find different ways to explore it. And maybe I'm going to focus more on grounding my energy with this practice, or focus more on my breath work, or focus more on this. But adding in more meditation, adding in more breath work, it sounds like is what you were working on your retreat. You can just, you mix it up to suit you.
Yeah. And maybe that is part of how I would define yoga, is it's intentionality. You know, it's being very intentional. And it's probably why sometimes like the workout idea is difficult for me, because I've experienced so many richer benefits from a yoga practice than losing weight, you know? And I know, and like, we're maybe coming to the end of our hour here or whatever. No. And so at some point you're going to say, what have you ever heard at yoga?
Oh, that's right. What have you ever heard at yoga?
And as I thought about that, like, it's so tempting, because I have this, like, I have this thing about like, well, yoga can be so much more than a workout. Like,
yes,
like my plea is like, please explore the part that's more than a workout, you know? And I had all these stories come to mind of like, what,
gosh, time flies. I could just talk to you forever. I'm glad you reminded me that I needed to ask you that. Yeah. What have you overheard? What did you overhear on a yoga retreat? What did you overhear at yoga?
So I have one I overheard at a yoga retreat.
What did you overhear at a yoga retreat?
I overheard, and this is kind of cheating because someone told me they heard this. I overheard at a yoga retreat, do you have a guru?
Do you have a guru?
Do you have a guru? And I've been thinking about that, because someone asked me about my experience with yoga, and I told a much better put together explanation of my introduction to yoga than here on this podcast. I'm so sorry about that. but I talked about the fellow who put the sequence together, the sequence that we teach in a hot yoga practice at the Hollywood Market Studio and elsewhere. His name is Sumit. You mentioned his name earlier. And Sumit would probably be one of the gurus that I've experienced. And gosh, we should like define that term. We don't have time. And there are other gurus. And unfortunately, most of the well-known gurus have passed away in the past 10 years. But someone asked that question of someone else on the retreat, and I've been thinking about it ever since. Do you have a guru? And I think it's been reminding me of like that idea of intensity. So traditionally in a yoga tradition, yoga has been a bit of an oral tradition, right? Or experiential tradition, where you go and you study from a guru, oftentimes for decades, for 30 or 40 or 50 years of study under a guru.
Oh my goodness.
And that's something that's definitely not part of our modern Western yoga practice, right?
It's not like the lunch hour 45-minute vinyasa class.
Yeah. But that's one that stuck out from the retreat. That's probably the thing that I overheard at the retreat that's been like bouncing around my head for the past, you know, few weeks.
I guess I'm just a really silly, immature person because when I hear that, do you have a guru?
Do you think of Guru Donuts, which is a popular donut joint in Boise, Idaho?
Who's that guy who's on Instagram and social media and YouTube who makes fun of spirituality and he's got like the long red hair and the facial
hair? Yeah.
And there's like a little video where he talks about his guru, Jeffrey. It was like a 17-year-old kid, and he's making fun of the whole thing. I don't know. That was the thing that came to. Did you find his name for me?
I mean, I know exactly who you're talking about, and I watch his videos. And because I'm on a podcast, I'm blanking. But there is a good story here. There was a college humor video a few years ago, which Shelly, shout out to Shelly again. And I joke about often. Where look this up. Look up Guru Carl. College humor, and you can see Carl the guru, which is really a funny one. The college humor video is it's like if Gandhi were to take a yoga class.
Yes.
Have you seen that one?
That is a really good one. That's there's good so one. Many good ones. I know you have to get going.
JP Sears. It came back.
God, some of his videos I'm like, ew, but other videos I'm like, yes. He nails it in such a good way. Be careful with gurus, but I like the term guru. It just makes me think of a mentor that can help you. And why not have a mentor in your spirituality or a mentor in your business, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yoga nidra is going to be nothing like what we talked about.
Oh my God. We didn't even talk about yoga nidra. Oh my God. Here's my plug for yoga nidra.
Okay.
A yoga nidra is a certain type of meditation. It explores putting the body to sleep while your mind is awake. That sounds trippy. It can be trippy and it's pretty cool. We are teaching me and Shelly are leading a yoga nidra experience on the 19th, Saturday the 19th at 7 p.m. unless we're wrong and it's actually 6 p.m. I can't remember now. No. Fact check me.
It's 7 p.m.
What you can expect would be about 30 minutes of kind of light movement. We like to do this four times a year at the solstices and at the equinox. So the solstice is coming up this weekend. This is our solstice summer nidra. So 30 minutes of meditation and 30 minutes of kind of light movement, extended meditation where you're lying down and comfy with like a pillow and a blanket. And I hope I see you all there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. Yeah. Bye, guys.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and I want to hear from you. Please send me your overheard at yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga, but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste.